It was the great band Rednecks and their hit single Cotton Eyed Joe that pontificated, where did you come from, where did you go? And indeed, working out exactly where the Reading are coming or going this season is proving rather tricky after a ground out stalemate versus Sheffield Wednesday and a rather enjoyable cruise past Barnsley on Tuesday night. Welcome to episode 145 of the Tyler Sen podcast. I'm your host Mark May, as always, and this week I'm joined by Alan Westy West. How's it going, mate?
Yeah, very good, thank you. Winter's coming now, we discussed this just off air.
Oh yeah.
Certainly getting cold, and I'm certainly getting soft since I've gone indoors and not outside so much.
Well, it was cold on Tuesday night against Barnsley, wasn't it?
It was. I was wrapped up warm for that one.
Yeah, definitely. I didn't actually have a Reading shirt. I'd gone for the Christmas jumper for the Barnes. Yeah, that's the seasonal feel, I think.
I've got to the age now where I take hot chocolate with me and...
Oh, a nice flask.
Yeah, nice flask.
I haven't had a flask of football in ages.
I don't even get searched anymore. I'm starting to look too old to get searched, I think. So obviously, no, I'm not trouble.
Yeah, well, they search the bags now to go in as well. And I've been to, like, the few games I've been to this season, I've kept all the little tags on my bag when they search it. They took them off this on Tuesday night.
Often wondered why they search your bag on a Tuesday night with 300 away fans and probably, what, 10,000 home fans. What is the point?
Well, I mean, the only time someone's ever taken anything out of my bag is at Old Trafford. They took the pen that me and my dad had had to get signatures since I was about, you know, 4 or 5, the autograph pen that we had. And about 20 years later, they took that out of our bag at Old Trafford.
Again, ridiculous.
The only thing.
Or they take a bottle, the lid off your bottle. And I think, well, what are you going to do with that bottle that you couldn't do with a flask? You know what I mean? In fact, my flask is like a torpedo, so you're probably better off taking that off me than anything else.
Yeah, people have lighters that look like grenades and all sorts of stuff these days.
Yeah, but that's all right, take them in.
Yeah, absolutely. Right, well, more of that after in the recap. And obviously, we'll have your mailbag questions as well and a bit of pub chat talking about the future of sports broadcasting. So we'll get into that right away just now.
View from the Tarhurst End. Recapping this week's championship action.
Right, so where do we begin then, Westy? We have a 0-0 draw and a 3-0 win to talk about. Good news or bad news out the way first?
Let's start with Saturday, seeing as that was first up.
Yeah, well, it was a stalemate against Sheffield Wednesday. Typically, I mean, you know, Sheffield Wednesday, good team. You think taking a point out of that isn't necessarily a bad thing in itself. But, you know, they've not been in a great amount of form, Sheffield Wednesday themselves. And they didn't really, you know, play particularly well against us.
No, I think Sheffield Wednesday... I mean, notoriously, they're always there or thereabouts every season, aren't they? I think last two seasons they've been in the playoffs and they're never far from the playoff action, are they? So when you look at that game, you're thinking this is a sort of yardstick to judge yourself on. If you look at their strike force, I mean, arguably all four of their strikers would probably stroll into our side at the moment with the lack of fitness we've got up front.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, most of them have a proven record at least, don't they?
Definitely. And they spent a lot of money on strikers. I thought this game was... Obviously, it was clearly a stalemate, but I just, again, what worries me about Reading, and I'm going to pick two players out in particular that I don't hear mentioned very often, but maybe I'm in a minority of one, where I think if they had a little bit more quality, Reading would be a lot further up the league, and that's Mo Barrow and Aluku. I think Aluku's finishing is absolutely dreadful. His finishing is bad. I mean, for a player that's worth as much money as he is, I've been impressed with his all-round game. When he's on the ball, he's tricky. He looks lively, you know what I mean? He tends to fade out of games, what wingers do in general. But if he could finish, then I think Reading would probably be in the top 10 rather than where they are. Because if you look at the chances he's had over the last couple of weeks, and I'm not talking about these the difficult chances, I'm talking about open goals, I'm talking about he's in the box and he's blazing it over the bar. He's side-footing them wide. I think further, even earlier in the season, he's missed a number of opportunities. You thought... You haven't even hit the target when it was easier to hit the target. I think there's one last night, actually, where he's in the box and we were sort of struggling at the time. It was 0-0, or we just scored.
Just falling off a corner, I think. Yeah,
and you think, hit the target, and he lacks power in his shooting. And I remember reading when he first came to the club, one of the Fulham fans, the blogs, don't expect him to score too many goals. And I can see why they said that now, because if he could finish, he probably would never be at Reading. But his finishing is badly letting us down. It's letting us down as a side because we're not killing teams off or getting back into games. I think that showed against Sheffield Wednesday. Barrow's the other one. Barrow, again, tricky. He looks difficult to mark. He's quick. He's got all the attributes to be a great winger. But it's just a lack of quality into the box sometimes. That cross that he doesn't make. That shot that he should get and he doesn't. You know what I mean? The only goals he's really scored this year sort of come off his shin. You know what I mean? I think he had one... against Leeds the other week, which was a nice finish, nice bit of play.
Yeah, and against Derby, he could have had a hat-trick, Barrow. But, I mean, with Aluko, it's weird, isn't it? Because I would say he's, out of the players who've got the best technique in the team, I'd say he's definitely up there. He's definitely, I mean, his set-piece delivery is genuinely pretty good.
Yep, not bad.
He's the goals that, I mean, what he scored one goal so far. I mean, he was a decent enough hit. It was a lot of power behind it, got a lot of control. He generally doesn't miscontrol the ball a lot, or, you know, run the ball out of play. And yet when it comes to his finishing, he just, it's always about 3 inches wide of where it needs to be, isn't it?
Yeah, or it's under hit, or again, it was over, yeah, over the bar. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? And I think if we look at, I know everyone, I listened to the radio on the way home yesterday and everyone was like, wow, it's disappointing wins, or a disappointing win, if there's such a thing.
Yeah.
But you just think, if you look back at some of the games, and Sheffield Wednesday was another game, and some of the other games that we've thought, I've just got beat, Wolves as another example. If Reading just had them two, Barrow and Aluku, putting the ball in the net a bit more often, we wouldn't be in a position we are. I know that's a stupid thing to say, well, of course we wouldn't be, but they've had good opportunities to score goals and missed. And I think if you go back to the Wolves game especially, I thought we was more than in that game for long periods of it, and I thought we was better than them for long periods of it. But when Wolves wanted to score, they had that little bit extra composure, you know? When they scored, the goal they did score, he's gone through and he's not panicked. He's just gone around the goalkeeper, slotted it in. Mo Barrett, in exactly the same sort of position as this other player that scored their goal, was it Hernandez or whoever it was? He's gone through and he's tried to dink the goalkeeper when really he had all the time in the world just to slot it. I mean, the keeper had already made his move and he's put his hand up and put it over the bar, just wide of the bar. And even in that game as well, we had them two opportunities. We've had one booted at us and the other one we've hit the post from Swift. Do you know what I mean? It's just that little bit of extra finishing. There's not enough finishers in that side for us to kill teams off.
I would say with Barrow, I have a little bit more sympathy with Barrow because he is such an out-and-out pace man.
Yeah.
If you want someone to bring the ball out from 30 yards away from your own goal to 30 yards away from your opposition goal, Barrow is one of the best, you know, one of the best equipped players we've had in quite a while to do that and to get it up the field quickly. And then if he could just, you know, lay the pass off to someone who could do, and I think Aluko probably gets into those positions a little bit more. Like, I think against Barnsley, Barrow did do just that. He burst down the left wing, could have had a shot, laid off to Aluko, and it was in the second half, and he just rolled it just right wide of the post in front of me at the Dolan stand. And if we're going to have a, you know, a 4-3-3 setup like that, you need either the wingers to, as you say, be able to score goals, or you need them to instantly find that man in the middle who can do it. And this is what I noticed against Barnsley, and I think it was the same against Sheffield Wednesday, is that Kermigan, it just didn't fall for him, it didn't go to him. There's something missing between that front three, isn't
there? Yeah, that's what I was pointing out. And I don't want it to sound like I'm having a go at these two players, because clearly they're first choice every week.
Oh, yeah, they are now.
I think Barrow and Aluku must start every week. But because we haven't got players in midfield that score a lot of goals, or haven't been scoring a lot of goals, and because we had a striker that's not been fit, so we haven't had anyone who's been putting a ball in the net, the responsibility lays on them two more than anybody else. Do you know what I mean? Because they're playing as sort of striking forward or wing forwards, aren't they?
It's a front three, isn't it?
Basically, that's what it is. And if you're playing that, you need them three to be scoring goals. And if your striker's not doing it like Kermigan did last year, then you rely on them two to get your goals. And they're getting good opportunity to score goals, but they're not scoring any goals. Or they're getting one in every four matches, which obviously isn't enough for us to be killing teams off.
Yeah.
And that could have happened against Barnsley as well, because I thought, luckily we scored early, which made Barnsley come out. But if we wouldn't have done that, again, you're relying on them two to get your goals. Because Kermigan clearly doesn't look fit to me still. And I think I remember saying at the start of the season, when he does come back, you're probably going to have to wait till after Christmas to get anywhere near his best, because he is playing himself into his fitness, if that makes sense, rather than being fit to play. He's sort of...
He's coming back from nothing. Yeah. And it's effectively his pre-season at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah, because I thought against Sheffield Wednesday, I thought he had a few decent touches in the first half. Second half, he drifted out of the game completely, didn't touch the ball.
Against Barnsley, I couldn't tell you one time he touched the ball.
Against Barnsley, yeah, I was going to say the same thing. He didn't get involved in the game hardly at all, except for a few defensive things where he won a few headers and he'd done quite well. But I think even Stam noticed that he dropped out of the game in the second half and took him off quite early.
Mm.
So, yeah, again, I think we've become reliant on them scoring and they're not scoring, and that's what's affecting the whole team. Because then everyone looks at everyone else and say, wow, it's been another boring performance, or, you know, that's sort of starting to suck itself. But we ain't that different to who we were last year, because last year I thought it was boring performances, but Kermigan or Swift was putting a ball in the net. So it skates over all that. Do you know what I mean?
I would say towards the end of last year, the wingers were probably having even less of an impact on the team. You think of how much Barrow and Aluko get on the ball at the moment. McCleary generally didn't get on the ball that much towards the second half of last season. And
no,
it was Behrens on the other wing. And we've spoken before on this podcast about how Behrens drifts in and out and doesn't necessarily offer you a full 90-minute performance.
Definitely not. And again, that's what I'm saying. Sheffield Wednesday, going back to it, it was a similar sort of thing. You heavily rely on them two scoring with the problems we've got up front at the moment. Are they doing it? No, they're not. So that affects the way I think we're seeing the whole picture. Because, like I say, it's not that much different to last year. I don't think the performances have been spectacular last year. I was sat for a load of games and thought, I don't know how we won that, because we were more efficient in scoring goals with less chances. Whereas this year, we've had probably the same sort of chances, but we've not scored. And that reflects badly on the whole side then, because you become reliant on your defence keeping clean sheets. Now, they've done it the last 2 weeks, which is great, but will they continue to do it? Probably not. So you're going to rely on Aluku and Barrow to take their chances when they get them, and they haven't been doing it.
Yeah, we'll talk about... I was going to maybe talk about Slayer, but I'll do it. I'll bring it up now. Is that John Deddy Bodvarsson came off the bench for a good, I don't know, like 35-minute run-out he had against Barnsley. And, you know, he looked lively. He doesn't have that much pace, I don't think. I think it's the first time I've actually watched him play. He's been injured when I usually go. And he doesn't have that much pace, but he does put himself about, and he does commit, and he does... you know, get on the end of things as well quite a bit, which Kermigan hasn't been at the moment, and got the third goal. Would you say that, I mean, is he the one that should be starting in front of Kermigan at the moment, or is it still worth playing Kermigan to get that full fitness back for him?
Judging by last night, you'd have to say he should start. Mm. Because, I don't know, you say he's not quick, but he's certainly quick enough. He's no slouch. I mean, he had a couple of opportunities when he got the ball wide and he ran at his defender. But he seems to cause more of a problem than Kermigan is at the moment, if that makes sense. He's
more of a creator, and he'll get run the channels and do things. If you give the ball to Kermigan in the penalty spot, I'd rather have Kermigan there. But if you're going to play the ball out wide, then I'd rather Bodvarsson run onto it.
Yeah, definitely. Again, I think at the moment you're going to see 45 minutes from both, because neither of them are fully fit. But out of the two, Bodvarsson looked fitter than Kermigan certainly did.
Let's move back towards the, as we sort of analyse both games in tandem in a sense then, let's move back towards the midfield. And Joey van den Berg is someone who's actually had quite a lot of praise for his performances in both games. First off, I mean, that stunning goal, we'll have to talk about it, against Barnsley. Should the keeper have saved it?
He got his hand to it, so you'd have thought he would have saved it.
Because I think the keeper expected it to go far post, and like I was sat basically right behind the swerve of it. And it did, you know, catch him out, the fact that it went near post. And, I mean, it shouldn't have caught him out, the fact he shot, because there wasn't a Barnsley player in the same postcode as him.
No, that's exactly what I was going to say to you. They sat off him so much that they encouraged him to shoot.
Yeah.
And we know he can hit a ball if he's given opportunity. And it was nice to see him score. And I thought, actually, in that first half yesterday, I thought he was really good. I thought he had a really good first half. I was a little bit concerned about him when he went down sort of 5 minutes from the end of the half, and I thought, well, maybe he's pulled something, but he come back out.
Seems to be right.
But I thought second half, he didn't live up to his first half billing. He gave a few sort of soft balls away, a bit Fulham-esque, you know what I mean, in dangerous positions when we sort of... I think what concerned me, and I know it did a lot of people around me, was in that second half, it was like Reading were trying to waste 45 minutes.
Well, Barnsley properly came at us in the set with three changes at half time. They have 2-0 football, as the saying goes.
Yeah, of course, they had nothing to lose, but Reading sort of...
they facilitated that.
Yeah, they sort of end up being their own worst enemy sometimes, because when they don't push forward on teams and they try and sit and pass it about, we all know, because we've seen it for the last two seasons, there's one or two players in that side that when sitting deep passing a ball, they've got a mistake in them. Alouri and van den Berg come to mind quite early in that. Gunter as well. If you ask them to play defensive, basically kill the game football, they give teams opportunities, and they did it against Barnsley, and I think a better side would have taken one of them, and then we'd have had 25 minutes, half hour of Barnsley banging on the door because their tails would have been up. I mean, luckily we scored that goal near the end and killed the game.
Yeah.
But it was dicey, I thought, in the second half.
I think it took us too long to score that third goal. I mean, I was sat there, the first half I enjoyed it and everything. I was sat there by... I mean, I tweeted off the Tyler saying, like, we need a couple more just to really drive home this is a good performance. And the third goal did satisfy me to a large extent. But we had a lot of counter-attacking opportunities and didn't make use of them. And I've written this down, that we didn't score any proper goals, did we? We didn't score any open play goals apart from the screamer, which you can't legislate for every week. Two goals from corners, one of which was a rebound. I enjoy those goals and they're great to score, but you do want perhaps a little bit more against a team as Barnsley. You know, they weren't great.
Yeah, I agree with you there. And also think that there was a point in that second half where we were under the cosh, because they had a lot of ball in the second half. They had a lot of possession. They had a few half chances. I think what turned it slightly was when Moore done what I would call a Danny-esque run forward, where he just
that was fantastic.
I thought, right, I'm going to take this ball by the horns here, and he had a good run at goal. He's hit the post, and I'm lucky we didn't score from the rebound. I think that sort of swung it a little bit further in our favour. But he led by example, which was good. And I think there's too much sort of pitter-patter and let's pass it around. And some stupid errors. I mean, some of the passing, kicking it out of play. I mean, Dave Edwards, I think, went to volley one and sort of, I don't know what he'd done with it, sort of come off the bottom of his foot and went out for a throw. And I thought, well, what was that all about? But yeah, I think they sort of played into Barnsley's hands, unfortunately. But again, we come away with a 3-0 win. I was quite surprised when I walked out and I was listening to the radio and there's people ringing up complaining that we'd won 3-0 at home. Weird.
I think the people complaining, like, I try and have sympathy with it. Like, at the end of the day, I mean, someone apparently in the North Stand was giving Paul McShane a bit of grief in the first half when he turned round and gave him a bit back, as it were. But, I mean, yes, we win 3-0 and perhaps it wasn't the most entertaining game, but at the end of the day, it is a cold Tuesday night for the players as well.
Yeah.
And they're only playing Barnsley. So they're not going to... If they're 2-0 up in that second half, I can understand the sentiment as to, you know, let's not go and break a leg here because they've got to go to Sunderland on Saturday. Then we got Cardiff the weekend. There's tough games ahead and it's a long season.
I think Stan sort of summed it up after. He said we've played better and lost games. And I think we'd have to agree with that. I think we played better against Wolves and we lost that one. One thing did impress me, so I had to go back to the Sheffield Wednesday game, but what did impress me on the Sheffield Wednesday game on Saturday was I didn't know that Chris Gunter could cross a football, because he certainly can't do it with his right foot, but on his left foot, he put at least three decent crosses into the box.
I think he's almost a better left-back than he is a right-back.
He's definitely a better left-back than he is a right-back. Because there's one guy who sits by me who hates Chris Gunter. He's always banging. Every time he touches the ball, he can't do no right. But I must admit, on Saturday, he sort of was a bit quiet on occasions when he's put a left-footed cross in. So, yeah, that was a positive. And the Bacana as well. I was impressed with him last night and Saturday.
He's just a sort of player that I look at and, you know, he's played in the Premier League and you can understand why someone would look at him and think, yeah, he's good enough. He's got the technique, the mentality, the physicality, etc. to do that.
I mean, there's definitely one point, I think this was in the second half, where he's made a tackle, he's on the floor and then somehow he's leaped off the floor in, like, literally the blink of an eye and he's back and made another tackle and played the upfield. And I thought, that's the sort of characters you want in your side. Whether he continues to do that, because I think he blows a bit of hot and cold, but I thought he was very good value last night.
Yeah, the last thing I'll touch on before we crack on into the next section of the show then is the fact that John Swift has been injured for the last couple of weeks, and that's meant Liam Kelly has had a chance to sort of step into that role, and I wouldn't say that he's quite matched Swift in terms of his contribution to the team. It just seems like Kelly, there was a chance in the second half of the Barnsley game, I think it was Barrow or Luca was hovering on the right-hand side, and he just basically had to loft it over one defender to get it to him, and he couldn't do that. And he's at the moment, he's just a yard off, perhaps where he was last season, certainly where he needs to be if he's going to be a championship or even a higher regular player going forward. What do you make of his impact? What do you think is in terms of his comparison to Swift? Because effectively, it's one or the other at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah, I think you'd pick Swift every day of the week at the moment, based on what we've seen so far this season. I think Swift last year, again, looked like you were saying Kelly looks this year. He looked a yard off the pace coming back from injury. I think this year he started relatively well since he's come back. Unfortunately, he's been injured again. But with Swift, I think you've got a stronger player. It worries me sometimes, especially last night, for example, is that when the going gets a bit tough and it gets a bit physical, Kelly tends to drift out of the game. Once he starts getting a bit hustle and bustle, this season especially, I think he drifts out of the game too quickly. And obviously that puts pressure on the other midfielders to have a bit bigger impact. I thought Edwards was pretty good last night. I thought he was all right.
Edwards is stable. He is definitely that. And he gets, I mean, the goal against Barnsley was basically the same goal that he scored against Millwall.
Yeah.
It was the same routine, near post corner flick on, which, I mean, if he scores five of those this season, I'd be happy as Larry. Like, I'd be delighted for that.
I think, judging by what happened last night, I think sort of Stan would agree with what I just said then, because he took Kelly off pretty early in the second half, sort of halfway through the second half.
Yeah, for Laurie as well, I think he just wanted to guarantee the win at that stage, wasn't it? It wasn't the most exciting substitution in the world, and perhaps that's why some of the fans were unhappy about it.
Well, I thought it was the right decision, because I thought Kelly was getting bullied to a certain extent when he got the ball. It was easy to push off it, and like I say, Kelly's job really is to play like a quarterback footballer, isn't it? It's to get the ball and try and pick passes.
Yeah, and to help others into play.
When they started breaking Reading and Kelly was asked to run with the ball, he was losing it.
Yeah, he's not much of a counter-attack player, is he?
No, so I thought it was the right thing to take him on.
Yeah, well, we'll see. We've got Sunderland on the weekend. We'll be previewing that a little bit later. But next, we're going to go into a pub chat and talk about such things as Facebook and Netflix and Amazon and all those things that you'd expect to talk about on a Reading Football Club podcast.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. By Reading fans, for Reading fans.
So those avid social media viewers that I know you all are would have noticed in the last few weeks that the club has been getting a bit, little bit more involved in terms of your Facebook and everything. Obviously, the Tarlhurst End is a pioneer in this sense, doing a Facebook Live, mainly after the games these days. I was up at the back of the East Stand after the Barnsley game, doing a little Facebook Live. But these days, the club have been doing things such as the under-23 games. We've had the game against Aston Villa, I think, was a Facebook Live. We've had a game against Brentford Bees for the women's team. Westy, is this the sort of thing we're going to be seeing a lot more of, or is this sort of thing you think should be encouraged, or is it actually just a little bit of a red herring?
No, I think we're definitely going to see a lot more of it. I think it's a good media outlet to get interest in the under-23s and in women's football. I think for the under-23s, for example, I watched a bit of that Aston Villa game. I was unaware that it was on, but I was flicking through Facebook and it just happened to click up. And I probably sat and watched 15, 20 minutes of it just to see how things were going. And I'll be honest with you, I quite enjoyed it. I thought it was a good game of football. It was quite end-to-end. There's no pressure on it, which is nice. And it's nice sometimes to watch a game with no pressure on it because you just can enjoy the game, you know, rather than trying to criticise or look at what's wrong rather than what's right. But yeah, I think it's the way the world's going with everything, isn't it now? It's easy to advertise stuff because of Facebook and Twitter. And for like outlets like ourselves, it's much easier for us to get known and we can advertise ourselves and we don't have to rely on anybody. And I think the club are using that to their advantage. And like we said before, if you look at a lot of the other clubs now, I know Wolves have got their own TV station and some of the bigger clubs clearly have got their own TV stations. And it's a good outlet for them to keep people informed, keep people interested, especially as the global reach of football clubs now is massive.
Yeah, well, I was thinking about with the under-23 game. I mean, you're not really going to have many people really going along to those sort of games anyway. A lot of the time they're free to go to, so there's sort of no harm done there. With the women's team, it's a little bit interesting because the future of women's football, I mean, it has to be financially solvent, doesn't it? And obviously you don't necessarily make much money out of doing these things. Is it a long-term future for that side of football, or is ultimately the club should be focusing more on getting people through the door and paying more for those sort of games?
It depends how you're going to use it. Now, if you're going to say, we're going to put three or four games a season on, it might drum up interest. As a personal thing, I don't think I'd go and watch a women's football match or an under-23 game, really. I went to see them when they had the final there against Man City a few years back, just because it was the final. So it can't do any harm. Now, if I watch Villa, Reading, under-23s and enjoy it, I might think, okay, they've got a game coming up in a couple of weeks. I might go down and watch it. I think, same with women's football. Women's football's becoming bigger in the sense that it's making it onto mainstream TV. Now, my theory is, and this might be controversial, is it's making it onto mainstream TV, i.e. BBC and BBC Two, because they haven't got any other football. They've got FA Cup, they've got like a Sky Sports. Sky Sports and BT have cornered the Premier League market, and now the EFL. So it's great for women's football because there is an outlet for them to be shown on TV. Now, will that make women's football more popular? Yes, it will, because people will sit and watch it on BBC and BBC One. Will it mean it'll break into the same sort of levels as men's football? No, it's never going to happen. Let's be realistic about it. That will never happen. Women's football will never be as big as men's football, rightly or wrongly. Not because I'm sexist, just because let's get realistic about it. It's like women's tennis. Women's tennis is great, but will it be as big as men's tennis? No, it won't be. It just won't.
All of the money in men's football comes from TV, and until you can guarantee X amount of viewers for a certain game, then obviously, I mean, that's economics.
It's just, yeah, it's just the way it's going to be. But For women's football, I mean, since I was a kid, there was no such thing. You know what I mean? It's a growing market, and I think America's got a lot to do as well, because obviously in America, women's soccer is pretty big, and a lot of women play football in America. In this country, it's a tough market to break. So if there's anything that you can do to improve that, i.e. games on BBC Two, BBC One, Twitter, Facebook, if you can get it out there, then it will become more popular. Will it ever become as popular as men's football? No. I can't see that happening in my lifetime.
Yeah, it's interesting because America, I think it's MLS have a deal now with, I believe it's Facebook or maybe Amazon, who have, you know, about 23 live games a season broadcast, you know, internet only, basically, unless you have a sort of smart TV or something like that. And is that something that, moving on to the Championship, is that something you can see happening, where the Reading game is going to be Facebook Live, or maybe just portions of them, maybe one game, or, you know, it's like flicks between different games at certain points?
I genuinely think the way football will go, and it's a no-brainer really, and they're already starting to do it to a certain extent, is if you, I know my mate Paul lives in Germany now, and he watches all Reading's games on iFollow.
Yeah, yeah. Because I think I looked into that when I was abroad, and to sign up for that, you have to have a bank account based in the country away. So when I was abroad, I can't just sign up for a game. You have to be a genuine proper foreign resident, basically. Yeah.
And I don't know what the statistics are, and I'm sure someone will, and they might be able to tell us. But if you look at the number of fans abroad, now the clubs are thinking to themselves, how can we tap into the money from that market, especially in the EFL? In the Premier League, it's a little bit different because most games are televised anyhow, so you'd probably be able to watch your team if you wanted to. In the Championship, that doesn't happen. It might be one or two games a week. So every club's got a lot of fans abroad, no matter who you are. Now, how can we tap into that market? Now, they've already figured out a way of doing that, and that's by having iFollow, that's by charging £5 a game or £150 a season, whatever it is.
That's £70 a season or something.
Which a fan abroad, I know I've got a lot of friends living in Australia, they wouldn't mind paying that, do you know what I mean? Mm. They will sit there and watch it, and they enjoy watching it and look forward to it.
It's a novelty, certainly.
It's a novelty, and it makes you stay in touch with your home team, really, because otherwise you ain't going to see them.
Yeah.
Simple as that. So it will come a time when teams will be able to, especially in the lower divisions, charge people from outside their area, I think, to watch games. Because two reasons. One, there's a big cash flow for them. There could be hundreds of thousands of pounds worth of team money every week coming in extra that they weren't going to get anyway.
Especially a team, imagine Leeds, or if a Newcastle is still in the Championship, or Everton. It's legions of followers aboard.
It's millions of pounds worth of money. Now, what they should do, and they will only do it when, obviously, it makes sense for the big companies to allow them to do it and be able to make money out of themselves, is they could charge you to watch that game at home, right? But what they should do then is, because I would rather watch a game live than I would watch on the telly. If we're at home, unless it's freezing cold like it was last night, I would rather go and watch it.
Yeah,
now, if you take this week's game, for example, we had two home games. Yeah, we had a good turnout on Saturday because we had a good away following.
Yeah, I think it's 15,000 home, 3,000 away, wasn't it?
That's right. And then against Barnsley, we had a poor home turnout. And that was because two reasons. One, it was Tuesday night, it was cold, let's face it. And two, if you paid for a game on Saturday, you weren't going to pay for a game on Tuesday.
Mm.
If you had a season ticket, you'd go anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
You've got the choice. So will watching that game on TV affect people going to that ground? Would you have any more, any less Barnsley fan turn up on Tuesday night if they could watch their game home? Maybe.
But you have 300, so take 20 away, you don't notice, do you?
Is it worth it? Yeah, it's not. But if they could make the prices for people to watch the games cheaper, and it's pretty cheap at Reading anyway, but for other clubs like Leeds, I think they charge like £30 for their own fans to get in.
Yeah, it's
a lot of money.
Yeah.
Now, if they lowered them prices, if they made it, I don't know, say a fiver or tenner, right, they'd probably fill the ground anyway. And you can still sell them games to the other Leeds fans that are not there, that don't live locally. Do you know what I mean?
Well, you could effectively say it's 15 quid to go to Reading Barnsley or to watch it at home. I mean, would you be able to make it 20 quid to watch it at home? No one's really going to pay that, are they? Unless you can, you know, throw in other sort of perks and benefits into that and think of a way to really make it, you know, not too much of an incentive to ditch going, but also still make it profitable to broadcast.
But if I follow, you can watch it abroad. You can watch it in Europe. But why couldn't you watch it if you was not, I don't know, Berkshire-based?
Yeah, well, that's the American rule, isn't it?
Yeah, if you're not Berkshire-based, then you could watch it. The Barnsley fans would have all watched it at home, even if you was charging them a fiver to watch it. Even if, I don't know, 10,000 Barnsley fans wanted to watch it at home, say roughly, might have been that. They would watch it. And where that money would all come back into the club, you know? So it wouldn't matter so much if you didn't have a full stadium, because we didn't have one anyway. It was our full anyway.
No, you take away 1,000 fans, you don't necessarily know the difference. Well, I think it's for next season or from a season after or something, that Sky Sports will have rights to show pretty much any midweek Championship game that they fancy. Like, obviously, at the moment, they don't. Like, last night, they had, you know, like Man United, Watford on. They didn't have, you know, Derby, Ipswich or something as well. But I think in the near future, that is what we're going to be seeing, is those midweek games are going to be targeted much more for the sort of the TV viewer, which I don't mind in itself. But one of the things I did sort of have a problem with is that I can't remember who said this, but it's one of the TV execs or someone said that basically we position the good sort of, you know, the profitable, marketable games to be on the Saturday so that we could broadcast them, and then we dump the games that we don't really care about on the midweek because we're not going to broadcast them anyway. We can't do it. So does that mean that if we can broadcast them, you're more likely to get sort of ferocious Tuesday night derbies as opposed to not so ferocious Sunday lunchtime derbies.
Maybe. But like I say, Leeds, if you watch Sky Sports, you know that Leeds won most of the time because they bring the most revenue in for Sky Sports. Simple as that. But there's definitely a market for watching games at home and the clubs profiting from that. And I think they will go down that route. The only thing that will worry them is the big clubs pulling out of Sky Sports deals.
Well, and the Premier League teams were trying to negotiate their own TV monies, which, you know, it's very difficult. I think Championship, that might happen a little bit more. The Premier League, it's hard to do that because you have to have everyone's agreement, effectively, don't you?
Yeah, because you don't want to happen because basically it's the TV money that pays for clubs, like ourselves, if we get promoted in Huddersfield and all the other smaller clubs to be able to compete at some level. But yeah, there's got to be market for it. And I think it can only benefit everybody, women's football, under-23s and the club itself.
Yeah, well, anyone listening to this wants to have their say, and we'll talk about this in the mailbag next week if you so choose. Send us in a email to thetarlesn@gmail.com or just get involved on Twitter or Facebook. We're always listening for your views. And if any of you have any great ideas to improve the way that football is broadcast and everything like that, and just has an inkling that certain things are going to go right or wrong, then do get in touch. And speaking of which, we'll be going on now to the mailbag.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at The Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/The Tarlhurst End.
Right then, thank you everyone who has gotten in touch this week, as always. And we'll start with someone who's gotten in touch plenty of times with the show over the last few weeks or so, and we'll happily always answer your questions, even if you send in every week. We'll always have something to talk about then in that case. And it's Scott from the States who is saying that at the conclusion of the Barnsley game, Reading were the only club in the Championship with a goal difference of zero. Pretty sure we ended last season with a goal difference of near zero, didn't we?
Something like that, yep.
Yeah, the Royals are the exact same distance from the bottom three and the top six. 9 points. Is the glass half empty or half full?
I think we all know that there's improvement to be had. I look at that squad and think they could do better than they're doing. I don't doubt that for a second. I think, arguably, it's a better squad of players than we had last year. I think, like I said before, earlier in the show, that the two wingers, if they put the ball in the net a bit more, we could only go up. I don't see us falling into anywhere near the relegation zone, because if Barnsley were above us last night, then they'd do well to stay up this year, I think.
Yeah, I thought Barnsley for... since the start of the season, I've thought they were in a bit of trouble. I mean, as I said in the intro, I just can't work out where we're going at the moment. I can't work out if we are making steps in progress. And I mean, you could probably look at the results and argue it either way. The fact that we're on zero goal difference, I agree, it's the strikers that are letting us down this season, not the defence. Like at times last season, we're not getting any thumpings this year.
No.
You know, last season we might have gone Sheffield United and lost 6-0, 7-0, but we're not. So... in theory, the defence is better, the attack is worse, and generally maybe our mentality's dropped a little bit as well. So yeah, I mean, I think I'm just going to have to wait and see. Maybe about Christmas I'll be able to realign, but I just can't tell at the moment whether my glass is half empty or half full.
No, I think there's more to come from that side, as long as the shackles are left off them a little bit.
Well, Hugh Vandalar says, was the Barnsley game a sign of progress or were Barnsley just bad? I think for the first half, Barnsley were just bad. They didn't have a shot on target until like the 45th minute. The fact that they came out a little bit in the second half and we withheld that and kept a clean sheet, I mean, that's certainly a positive. Yeah, I don't think you can really have a negative spin on that. And the scoreline, I don't think it really flattered us because I think we should have scored more.
Yeah, I think Reading, especially in the first half, were always in control of that game. Again, against Sheffield Wednesday, I thought they was largely in control of the game. And against Wolves, I thought they was largely in control of the game. But like I said earlier in the show, if you don't score in your control of the games and you tend to give away sloppy possession and give them chances, then you will get beat. Barnsley were never going to do that last night. They didn't have the quality to beat us. Mm. Whereas Wolves did, and Sheffield Wednesday could well have done as well.
Yeah, Chris Hartley, who's been on the show recently, says that while the last three games have only yielded 5 points, they've also had two clean sheets. And do you feel that we played better defensively in the last two home games? I think so, yeah. I mean, as I said, the Barnsley game, I don't think we were really tested in the first half. Maybe got away with one right at the end of the second half. But, I mean, the Sheffield Wednesday game, they only had about 5 shots. And that's a total you can pretty much be proud of, isn't it?
Yeah, I think the way you need to look at it is if you look at both goalkeepers, Al-Habsi from last year and a goalkeeper this year, he's definitely had a lot less to do than Al-Habsi done last year.
Well, how many times would you say Mignone's been the man of the match this season?
He's not had to make many saves, has he, when you think about it? And we're not conceding a great deal of goals when we do get beat, and he's not making a lot of saves. Is it because he's a bad goalkeeper? Clearly not. I think he's better with his feet than Al-Habsi ever was. but he's having less work to do, which means we're defending better. But last year, like I said, we took opportunities when we didn't create that many, whereas this year we're not creating a great deal, and when we're getting them, we're not taking them. And that is that, as I said earlier, that is reflecting badly on the whole side.
Yeah.
Because it makes you look at other areas and say, well, that's not happening, that's not happening. Whereas probably last year it was exactly the same, but we were scoring and we're not doing it this year.
Yeah, I would say it's a sign of progress. Just sort of digressing a little bit on this. It's a sign of progress that last two seasons, Al Habsi's been our player of the season both years, hasn't he? I mean, Manone's not going to be the player of the season this year.
No way.
At the moment, it's Liam Moore, I would say, is your favourite to win it by some distance. Yeah. And that's a sign of progress, is that the centre-back being the leader of the team and maybe contributing a little more goals is a far better overall summary of a team than having your goalkeeper bailing you out every week.
Yeah. Also, I'll discuss this a bit off what we're talking about. Liam Moore... Can I ask you a question? Do you think that if Celtic did make a 5 million offer, Reading would take it?
Not 5 million.
That's what I thought. 5 million is a disgraceful bid for a player that...
I don't see what you can point at and say. I mean, pretty much everywhere he's been permanently, he's done a very good job at. So I don't see what you can point at and say why he isn't worth 10 to, you know, 8, 12 million, that sort of thing.
I think in today's market, I'd be shocked if they sold him for anything less than £10 million. Because what are you going to get for 5 million that will replace him?
Well, you're going to have to buy someone from abroad, someone who's not, you know, not... Someone who's worse, basically.
Yeah, you're going to buy someone that's worse. I think Reading would be stupid to sell a player of that quality for £5 million. Because let's face it, we got him for a snip.
Oh, yeah. I don't think we will sell him for that amount. If we're buying Sonny Aluko for 5, 7, whatever million pounds, I can't imagine it will sell for anything less than 10.
No, that would be. I think it'd be ridiculous to sell him for that sort of money. Because it's peanuts in today's market.
Yeah, absolutely. Even for Celtic, their players apparently worth £40 million these days. Which,
come on now,
take it or leave it. Ben Greenwood asked, "Were you surprised at Barnsley's tactics in the first half? They've decided to press us quite high, despite the fact that we've struggled against teams who've sat deep. Also, we definitely had a practicing 1-2s. It was nice of them to sort of play us up the pitch. I think there were a lot of 1-2s and they were quite nice to watch. Mainly in the first half, though."
Yep.
Barnsley's approach, I mean, I just found in the first half like they just didn't really... It's quite lethargic. They didn't really know what they wanted to do, Barnsley.
I think they turned up to get beat in the first half. They, I mean, they didn't offer us anything.
Yeah, they didn't turn up to get a point, just turned up to
get beat.
See the game out.
Yeah, that was just like it was going to play out the 90 minutes. It was only till the second half came when they had nothing to lose, like we said earlier, that they had a go at us. And when they did have a go at us, we did open up at times. They had opportunities to score. So it's a shame that teams are coming down to sit and defend against us. But because it works, you can't really blame them, can you?
No, not so much. Well, moving on, Andy Johnson talks about a player who we haven't seen for obviously a few months at the Mad Stad, saying, "Would you agree that Danny Williams is a huge miss for us this season? Sometimes you don't realise the true value of a player until he's gone."
Yep, I mean, I always said last season, if you listen to podcasts, Danny Williams is one of my favourite players, if not my favourite player. And the reason for that is because what he'd done last year, and he's done all the years he's been with us, is he offers you drive for midfield. He will get the ball, he will run at players, and he will cause problems. Just because he's got that ability to drive on and try and push teams. Now, is he the best passer of the ball? Is he the most quality midfielder we've ever had? No, he's not. But he leads by example, a bit like what Liam Moore done on Tuesday night when he put his head down and run at defence. Because it opens teams up, especially when they're going to sit deep. If you've got someone who's running at them, it causes them issues. And I think they do miss that because I think a lot of our midfielders are all very much the same.
Yeah, I don't know where I play him. I suppose you play Swift and you play him alongside Vandenberg and Williams and Swift would be a three, or it was last year. I mean, I don't see how Edwards can necessarily fit in alongside him.
I don't think Edwards would fit in if Swift was fit and we had Williams here still. And I think Edwards is a steady championship footballer. I think he's okay. But is he as good as Danny Williams? I don't think so.
No, I mean, he plays in the Premier League, the other one plays in the Championship, simple as. I'm not the biggest Danny Williams fan. I wasn't the biggest Danny Williams fan when he did play, but it's kind of undoubted that he would improve the team at the moment because, as you say, he'd offer something different.
Well, he never give up, does he, Danny Williams? You never see him give up. You never see him lay on the floor. He always gave you everything he had, and I think fans like that in general.
Yeah, of course. And Friday Mystery says, time for Bodvarsson and Kermigan to play up front together to try and get the best out of them, or in getting them both into form, basically. Are they too similar to be playing alongside each other, or is that a bit... Are we, you know, looking too simply to think that?
No, I don't think they're too similar to play. I think they're very different players. I think what happens is, because you have two strikers at a tool, you automatically assume that they're the same sort of player. They're not. I think Kermigan is a very clever player. I think the best cross of the night last night was his, when he played to Bacana and Bacana volleyed it wide.
Mm.
And I thought to myself, that's the sort of crosses that he would like, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
He's a great player, Kermigan. When he's fully fit, he links play. He's big and strong. He can flick balls on. And I think Bodvarsson's got a bit more about him in the fact that he's more mobile. And I think if you played them both up front together, and I think it will happen, but unfortunately, it's only going to happen when we're losing the game away from home and they're chucking a kitchen sink at it.
Yeah, I can't imagine at home we're going to start. Certainly, we're not going to start 4-4-2 because that would mean either dropping Aluko and Barrow and having like centre mids as wide men, or you're going to have a midfield of just Vandenberg and Edwards, and I don't think Stam has any faith in that sort of system.
No, I agree with you, and I think you'd have to play wing backs if you're going to play them together, and like you said, you'd have to drop Aluko and Barrow, and I can't imagine him doing that.
Yeah.
But do I think that would work? I think there's games that it would do, definitely.
Yeah, I think if we were 1-0 down to that Barnsley team yesterday, I think it would have absolutely, you know, steamrolled them in their quality of defence.
If you've got a bypass midfield because they've put the coach in front of it, the bus, part of the bus in front of the goal, if you've got a bypass midfield and you've got Bodvarsson and Kermigan to hit fully fit, I think you can hit them both and I think you can play off them. So I think there's scope for it, but will it happen? I doubt.
No, well, I mean, even Lewis Grabham was getting games alongside Kermigan last year and he played in every position but striker. So.
Exactly. Yeah.
So on that note, we'll look ahead to the return of Lewis Grabham into our minds as we go to any other business and look forward to the Sunderland game on the weekend.
The Tarlhurst End podcast. Read the blog on thetarlhurstend.com.
Right, so Reading fans over the years have always found that the Welsh players in the team perhaps play a little bit better when they're under Chris Coleman than they're when they're under Jaap Stam. However, now it's against Chris Coleman on the weekend, and it's Sunderland away with Chris Coleman's first home game in charge of the Black Cats, having beaten Burton Albion in his first game in charge 2-0. He didn't make that much of a personnel or tactical change. Comparing the two team sheets and whatnot from the game against Villa beforehand and the Burton game. And yet, you know, they're bottom three. I don't think this is the right time to play Sunderland.
No, and I've said many a times on this show that when a club have got a poor record of some sort and Reading go there, they tend to break it.
Yeah, that is the time, isn't it?
Yeah, unfortunately. I don't think they've won at home for nearly a year, have they?
Well, don't tell me that.
That's shocking for any club. Again, they will get a lift from a new manager. Coleman's proved that he's been a good manager for Wales. He's got a lot out of what you'd have to say is an average football team, other than the fact he's got Gareth Bale. Can he do it at Sunderland? I think it's a good time to be the Sunderland manager. I think they've had two years now coming up for of dreadful football. One, they nearly got relegated. Then they did finish bottom. And now they're down the bottom of the Championship. So if you're going to take a big club like this on, it's a good time to do it. Now, will they get a lift on Saturday? That's where you need Reading players to step up and say, let's go at them for the first 10, 15 minutes. Let's put them on the back foot. If you score, the crowd will go back to thinking we're going to lose this. And so will the team. It's all down to Reading what they can force upon them in the first 15-20 minutes. If we can score, I think their heads are dropping. I think, oh, here we go again.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's that cliche of you can't score too early. I don't think Sunderland can score too early against us. I think Sunderland can score in the first second, and that'll be, you know, they'll be off.
Yeah,
they'll be flying up. I think it's just the worst time possible to play them, in the sense that even if you do get a two-goal lead and they get one back, I think the crowd and everyone will be up for it and they'll give them a lift. It's like a siege mentality sort of game, isn't it? And does that mean that coming out with a point, even though they are in the bottom three, is a good point?
I think any game you don't lose away from home is a good point. I mean, they are down the bottom of the league, and rightly so. They have been poor. Again, they're poor at home. But like you said, they've got a new manager now and they will get behind them, I'd have thought, on Saturday. But like I said, it's in Reading's hands, really. Are we a better side than them? You'd have to say yes, wouldn't you? You'd have to say, at the moment, Reading are a better side than they are. So it's down to Reading to take the game to Sunderland when they get there, because Sunderland ain't going to sit in and defend. They're going to have to come out and have a go at us because they're at home.
Well, so even against, in the last couple of games against Villa and Burton, they did have the majority of possession. So if they're going to come round and knock it about a bit, then that, you know, against Derby, certainly that opened up the counter-attacking chance for us. There's a route to winning this game, and I think I sort of agree that it's down to us. But one player who might have a bit of an impact on that is Lewis Grabban, who we mentioned a few minutes ago. Why is he scoring now? to be frank.
One, he's playing up front, which helps. Two, if you look at the goals he scores, at Reading, he was asked to come very deep a lot of the time. I don't remember Lewis Grabham being given the sort of balls that he is at Sunderland. If you look at his goal at Sunderland, every time he scores or every time he gets an opportunity, it's because he's on the last man and he's facing goal. When he played for Reading, he was halfway down the field with his back to goal all the time. And that is why he didn't score here. And that is why at Sunderland, he's putting the ball in the net.
Do we misuse a lot of strikers? Because Vidra was another one who he's scoring that for Derby. He was obviously scoring beforehand at Watford and he played for us and he didn't score. Do we just, I mean, is there some, are we, like Chelsea were the old team in like the mid-noughties who ruined strikers. Do we just, a lot of strikers just, we just don't get, we don't understand them?
Yeah, I'd have to agree with that. Like, again, it's a bit off the topic, but I remember I was watching probably about 3 or 4 months ago, 100 Premier League greatest, and it was all the players that had scored over 100 goals in the Premier League, and it was showing you their goals. And you'd probably see about 50 of their 100 goals. And then Robbie Keane on there. If anyone gets to see this, if it's on, watch it. I implore you to watch it, because Robbie Keane, virtually every single goal he scored was exactly the same. He was on the last man. They played it over to the top for him. He's run past him. He slotted in there. I think he scored something like 2 headers or 3 headers out of that 100 goals for the whole time he scored goals. But they knew how he played and they played to his strengths. It's a bit like asking Curran and Lafondre to go and play on the wing or play deep. Pointless.
Yeah.
They got no touch. They're not good footballers, but they know where the goal is. And it's the same thing with Reading. When we get strikers, rather than watch and think, oh, this is how he plays, we'll play to their strengths, we tend to play our way and it doesn't suit everybody. And that's why Grabham didn't score goals here. And to a certain extent, it's probably why Vidra didn't score goals here.
I would say even with, I mean, Koppel maybe not so much, but even with McDermott, I mean, we think about Stam and all those sort of managers who make the players play the way the manager want to play. Even McDermott was like that as well in a large extent. People like Danny Guthrie came to the team and found that they were just completely incompatible with the way the manager wanted to play. And we do tend to have those managers who are just like, no, this is how it's going to be.
Yeah.
And if you're not good enough or you don't suit it, then you'll just struggle and fail.
Well, you have to fit into the system rather than we're sort of play it the way you want us to play.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And when you get players on loan, I suppose there is a certain amount of that because they're not there for very long, so you're not going to build a side around them. Vidra, again, I want to take a little bit about what I said from there. Vidra had lots of opportunities to score for Reading, and he just didn't finish. As simple as that.
He had a lot of chances. They weren't the chances he maybe wanted, but he had chances nonetheless. A striker should have done better. Sort
of. But with Grabham, he did, if you watch him, his performances for Reading, he had a lot of back to goal and he didn't have a lot of opportunities.
Out wide and trying to feed Kermigan, wasn't it?
That's right. And so, that's why Grabham scores goals at Sunderland, because they play to his strengths rather than him having to play into a system.
Well, I'll put you on the spot then and have to ask for a prediction for the Sunderland game. I've noted here, as you probably noticed on our notes, is that Westy picked up his first point since mid-September in the prediction league this Tuesday night with a victory against Barnsley.
Do you know what? Every time I hate picking Reading results because I can't back against them, even though my heart says to me, don't back against them. My head's saying, what are you thinking? But I'm still not going to back against them. I'm going to say they're going to go to Sunderland and they're going to beat them 2-1.
Okay, well, I'm going to go for the fact they haven't won at home for so long, it's just so tempting that we will be the team to lose that. But I'm going to say that it's going to be a 1-1 draw and that we're going to perhaps have to hold out a little bit for that. I mock you somewhat for being failing in your results. I'm actually only 1 point ahead of you in the prediction league now, having said that Barnsley was going to be a draw. But again, that was me playing myself, because I'd said we were going to beat Sheffield Wednesday, we didn't. And I was like, well, I can't say we're just going to win every game, so we've got to draw one at some point and be beaten. So yeah, I'm on 8 points at the moment with Johnny and Handbags, and Tom and Wim have strolled out into the lead on 11 points.
Still not great, though, is it? 11 points.
No, I mean, how many games have we had now? We've had a good 20 or so, and you only get 1 point for getting the, you know, win, lose or draw right, and that's only happened like, you know, 5 times each maximum. So, you know, it's an interesting one. We'll have to see how it is. And Sunderland game, obviously, if anyone has their own predictions, send them in, and maybe Ollie and Tom will discuss them in the podcast extra, which will be on Friday as usual, I believe. And next week, Monday, I'll be here with Steve Curtis, War Hoops. And Roger Titford as well from Star, who will be discussing his Robin Friday book.
Well, if you can't get a lot of stories out of Roger Titford, then you can't get stories out of anyone, because he must have seen every game since the dawn of time.
Well, if anyone has any mailbag questions for the 1975 win over Burnley, then
he's your man.
Yeah, that's the time to get them in. So that's it for the episode 145 of the Tarleton podcast. Thank you very much, Westy, for dropping by.
I love it. It's always a pleasure.
And we will see you, as I say, but next Monday we should be having the podcast recording. Now we'll have the podcast extra on Friday and all the previews, the reviews, the reports, the ratings of the Sunderland game on Saturday. Hopefully it will be a win. Come on, you arse.